Welcome to Chronic Combat Conversations, a live look at our best bets, picks, and predictions for every UFC event. With your hosts, TB Scouting MMA and...
The Guru, back again for UFC Vegas 48, Johnny Walker versus Jamahal Hill. But first, to help us break down this heck of a card, we have current UFC fighter on a four-fight win streak, 3-0 in the UFC, fresh off of performance bonus, 50K in the bank, our man, Nate Maness. Welcome, buddy. Thanks so much for joining us.
No, man, I appreciate you guys having me on, man. Let's get it started.
Hell yeah.
So before we get into the breakdown, it'd be a disservice if we didn't get in a quick couple questions here, because there's definitely been some stuff on our mind. You know, full disclosure, we were on your opponent in the last fight, and we got to say, we took a big L there, even though we talked about your toughness going in, but you did take an injury at the end of the first round, and man, I wouldn't even imagine being able to move after that. Mm-hmm. And here you go coming back with that knockout in the second. How's your recovery from your jaw injury been? Do you remember anything from between those rounds?
I actually have memories of being on my butt, you know, when he set me down. So I remember the entire, minute that I got for the break and all that. As far as recovery goes, tonight was my first sparring night. So that's the first time I've thrown a punch at somebody actually got hit back. I'm still wearing headgear and everything like that. Maybe more mental than it is physical. But I've been grappling now for maybe a month and a half. I feel as sharp as ever. The cardio is the main thing, but that doesn't take too long to get back. But I'm feeling good, ready to go.
That's seriously awesome to hear, man. If you don't mind sharing, who have you been training with lately?
I've been doing most of my training up at Nice Guy Submission. They got guys like Bobby Emmons, who he competes for EBI, different high-level grappling competitions. David Overfield, who fought for Bellator. We got Aaron Riley's there, who is a longtime UFC guy who's fought Tony Ferguson and guys like that.
Right.
So we got a good group of guys. Jesse Ray Childery, who's getting ready for the ADCC trials. He's a black belt. We got a stacked gym for a small gym, man.
That's awesome, man. Getting those hard rounds in, that's important. And seriously, congratulations on getting back into sparring. I know you said that it's really more of a mental thing, so I'm happy to see you jump that hurdle a little bit.
Yeah, man, I had a good time.
One day at a time.
We know you came on here to talk some fights and breaking down some betting, and I think I've seen you got a little partnership with my bookie, if I'm not wrong there. Do you often gamble on UFC fights, or have you ever bet on yourself?
I don't bet on myself. If you guys followed me on Facebook, you know why. I don't post too much on Twitter.
Okay.
But, man, I haven't won a bet in I can't tell you how long, man.
Oh,
so I bet like $2 or $3 here and there. If I bet on myself, it's a guaranteed L. So whatever I say today, whoever's watching, do not go with my choices.
Oh, my goodness. That actually works, because it's still a lock. That means they're just going to go the opposite of your choices.
Yeah, go opposite. You're guaranteed, man, for sure. I actually bet on the Bengals when they got up, and then them fall through at the very end as soon as I bet on them. So if that tells you anything.
That's brutal. Yeah, I was on the I like the Bengals with the points, but I thought the Rams would stick it out. I like to follow the Vegas trends, and Vegas literally needed the Rams within 1-3, and that's exactly what happened.
Right,
Vegas
right.
never loses.
I guess my last question before, I know Guru has a special one at the end. What's like your favorite non-fight related interest? What else do you enjoy doing the most?
Basketball for sure. I actually played some basketball this morning, and my first love. I turned out to be 5'10", and it is what it is. You only go so far, man. I do my best, but basketball for sure, man. I love basketball.
You're speaking my language over there. I just played my first league game with my brother last night for the first time in like 7 years. I've been playing in the morning, doing like a run with some guys, but to get back in like a competitive environment with the refs and everything, I'd love to hear that you love basketball. Of course, my Knicks just blew that game against the Nets too, so that was definitely interesting coming into here.
But I'm best on left bench, so I just kind of warm it. I keep the bench warm and the water cold. You know what I'm saying?
It's all for the love, man. It doesn't matter about your playing time. I'm all about the love.
And Guru, take us away with the last
speaking
one.
Of some libations, last question. We're on Chronic Combat Conversations. It's not just the chronicness of fights continually happening. It is you know, the chronic. So I must ask you, now that it is legal for you to do that with USADA, do you enjoy the chronic yourself, my friend?
I haven't yet.
Right. Ever in your life?
No, I have in the past before. Not regularly. Or anything like that.
Regularly. All right. Okay. I just figured it was an interesting question. I know some people do it for recovery. I know some people do it.
I haven't heard anything like bad things about it or anything. I just haven't jumped in yet.
No worries, man. I figured I'd ask. But what do you're a drinker? Do you or just like really no, you're just a workout and basketball guy?
No, I'll have a beer here and there for sure. Not too much on the liquor. It doesn't do me right, man. I don't know. It's something about fighters getting punched in the face. Liquor just doesn't do well for us. So I try to stay away from that. But definitely, I like my beer here and there for sure.
That's smart, man. It doesn't help with the weight cuts anyway.
Right.
But hey, thanks so much for answering those questions. I mean, if you guys have anything in the chat that you wanted to know and you want to add something in before we finish up here. But for right now, we're going to get down to breaking down this card, because I mean, you know, we do still have, you know, maybe not the most stacked of events, but like we always like to say, there's a lot of a learning experience that comes from seeing some, you know, more UFC inexperienced fighters. And I think, although, you know, there's a couple big names up at the top, I think that this will be a great place to do some like applied live scouting rather than betting the entire card here. But that doesn't mean we're not going to give you some degenerate plays.
Oh, absolutely. Without question. This card has tons of live scouting opportunities. All these fighters are going to be, I would say most of them will be seen again. Everybody's getting a good chance here, a good shake. So, you know, this is just one of those cards that they got to fill 40 Saturdays a year, man. And they got tons of fighters. So just pack them in.
Hell yeah. Well, to kick off the card, we got Johnny Walker versus Jamahal Hill. And this fight was thrown into the main event, still five rounds, just as of last week. I mean, we were supposed to come in here breaking down Rafael Dos Anjos versus Rafael Fiziev.
Crazy.
And here we are. I mean, I was really looking forward to that one. Thankfully, just got pushed back. But instead, we got Johnny Walker versus Jamahal Hill. And I got to tell you, I mean, as far as excitement goes, I mean, this one should be a banger as well. I know we were all betting the fight inside the distance with Johnny Walker versus Santos, and what a surprise when that one went all five. So here we are again. We got Johnny Walker versus Hill. I mean, Johnny Walker, 2-inch height, 3-inch reach, and certainly has the explosion on his side. But the question is, can the technical background with the boxing and the movement of Jamahal Hill and the cardio, is that going to catch up to Johnny Walker? I mean, we got the line sitting minus 250 Jamahal Hill and plus 200 Johnny Walker. I mean, Guru, where are you leaning on this one?
It's kind of a weird thought for me, because it's not that any of us really envision this fight going the full five rounds or really even entering those championship rounds. But maybe our fighter on staff can give me a little bit more insight into this. But there's something about me that feels like the psychology of it being a main event, the psychology of it being a five round fight. I kind of now like this more for Johnny Walker, the dog, than I did before when it was a three-round fight, when I really liked it more for Jamahal Hill. Maybe it's Johnny Walker just came off five rounds with Thiago Santos, who, you know, doesn't have the same sort of offensive ability that Jamahal Hill does, especially with the boxing combinations. But, I mean, in terms of being scary, deadly, experienced, I mean, Santos possesses all those things. Johnny Walker won that first round and, you know, was, in my opinion, was able to steal a later one as well. But, you know, a lot of that came down to that fight was just, there was such a lack of output from both sides. I think Jamahal Hill is not going to be that way. I mean, we've seen that throughout his last, throughout his UFC run. I mean, his last four fights ended so quickly. So I think when he's the one pushing forward, Johnny Walker, as you see, is going to have a decent reach advantage. I don't think that's something Jamahal Hill is used to. I think his fight IQ could be a little suspect, honestly, and maybe with a little bit of extra confidence too, that he kind of has this little bravado about him. I don't know, man. What do you think, Nate?
Man, I like Johnny Walker at that plus 200. I think that's a pick'em fight, to be honest. I actually think Johnny Walker is better technically, skill-wise, from the ground up. Right. Jamahal Hill can obviously catch him. And Walker has been known to, you know, do some crazy things in there. Sometimes he leaves his chin up. Sometimes he pushes the boundaries too much and ends up getting caught. But if you're going to put a bet down on, you know, on a basically a pick'em fight for me, that I feel like that, Johnny Walker's not a bad way to go.
I'm totally with you there, Nate. I mean, when I look at this fight, you see Jamahal Hill and the way he catches Jimmy Crute coming in with that check hook. I don't think he had like he had a big reach advantage in that Jimmy Crute fight. He's given that all back right here to Johnny Walker, and those counters that he uses when guys are coming forward, you know, that's not going to be as effective. And I really do think he's going to be thrown off from really pushing forward with his own pace due to the explosion and the power coming back. I know Walker didn't look great against Santos. He looked very reserved, a lot of feints, but a lot of that is also tied into the fact that Santos is explosive. And I don't see Hill bringing that same type of danger on the feet. I do think what Hill brings is the cardio and the boxing combinations. But I mean, say Johnny Walker, you know, shoots for a takedown later in the fight, I think he's successful. I don't know why he would go to that game plan necessarily, but you know, given the size advantage, I do think that is at least a possibility.
I
And
definitely think
overall,
it.
yeah.
I definitely think it's smart for him to mix it up. I don't think he wants to go out there and just straight throw hands with Jamahal Hill. But if he makes it, even if he doesn't get his takedowns, just to mix it up, get him thinking about it, use his reach, use all of his tools, I definitely think he can come out on top for this one.
I like that, man. And he's definitely seemed the least, you know, we all make our jokes here, but, you know, fighting out of SPG, at least he's shown, you know, feints. He's shown a little bit more patience. He's not just running forward into everything. And maybe that's why he's not getting knocked out so quickly anymore. I mean, the Corey Anderson and Ryan Spann fights were a show of bravado. And, you know, at least in the Santos fight, we saw a little bit more, you know, thought and IQ behind the process. Even if it wasn't the most exciting fight, I think it shows him, you can trust him a little more. I mean, Guru, you have any other thoughts here?
Yeah, I mean, you guys nailed it. I mean, Jamahal Hill is at over 70% implied probability. Again, this guy is in his first main event. Could he be all that in a bag of chips? Maybe. It's certainly possible. I think Johnny Walker has now been there, done that. I think Jamahal Hill will be feeling the pressure. And I like Walker to utilize his natural range to keep Jamahal Hill frustrated, and he's going to rush in and do something that he shouldn't.
Great. Any last thoughts on this one, Nate, or should we keep it moving?
No, man, I think I would go with Johnny Walker personally. I don't really have any more breakdown on it, but I think that's a good number for someone that can definitely win this fight.
Yeah, I don't think we necessarily have like a play of the day here, but at plus 200, you got to be taking at least some kind of shot on that. I think
Right.
we're all in agreement there.
I would love to hear somebody that's super, super on Jamahal Hill at nearly minus 300. Like, I would love to hear that really hard pounding driving argument because I'm not really sure what it is.
It's a great question, but I'll tell you what time it is. It's
Uh-oh.
oh boy, what did I just do there? That was interesting.
What did you
But
do?
yeah, I gotta be honest, I'm not even sure. We're gonna oh, here we go. That's what happens when you hit buttons that you shouldn't. So now we're gonna move on to our co-main event. This was another one that was put together on a shorter notice, right? I mean, we got Kyle Daukaus versus Jamie Pickett. Pickett just fought recently, and here he is coming back. I mean, he just won back in January against Joe Holmes. And then, you know, Pickett said, you know what? I'm still in shape. I'm still ready to go. I grapple for 15.
Yeah,
It's not
bro,
a problem.
can we put some respect on the Night Wolf's name? Like, what is happening here? He's a major dog to Lorena Starapoli, who Lorena Starapoli shouldn't be a minus 300 favorite to anybody. Then he faces Joseph Ugly Boy Holmes or whatever. Again, making his UFC debut, and maybe he's got the size on him, but again, he's favorited. And then Pickett's an underdog, and we cash again on our boy Pickett.
So
And
what's the
now.
line here now?
But you would think that you'd get a little bit closer or whatever. Okay, maybe Kyle Daukaus is a step up in competition. Sure, plus 200, right? Like, what are we talking about here? Jamie Pickett is somebody that, sure, maybe doesn't jump off the page and impress you in by doing something so
Like
incredible,
technical, right?
right? But he's so, I think he's just really well rounded. He's like moderately well rounded in everything that he does.
And he's a
Sure,
grinder.
the cardio could use a little bit more, and I think the output could use a little bit more, right? But what I see from him is somebody that, you know, knows his strengths. He's able to use his range, manipulate his range, which a lot of guys aren't. You know, they use their natural ability. He's got an 80-inch reach, and then he will crash forward and utilize the clinch and utilize the takedown and will do it over and over. And I love seeing guys that, you know, you can kind of trust to stick to a game plan on some level, even at quote unquote lower level MMA. What you see from Kyle Dawkins is, at least from what I've seen, hopefully maybe you guys can help direct me here. Kyle is a bit of a bully, right? Like, he does like his quick hands, similar to his brother, not as quick, obviously. But when he gets gassed, or at the end of the day, what he really wants to do, he's relying on his clinch and his grappling. And Jamie Pickett, who's going to be way more athletic, thicker, and have a reach advantage, I don't know that Kyle's just going to be able to lay on him like that. And you see it in like the Phil Hawes fight when he tries to lay on Phil after hurting him. He can't do it because Phil is too athletic and too strong. And then he starts cracking him and then he loses the fight. So, you know, his only UFC win is Dustin Stolzfus. I mean, yeah, he probably beat Kevin Holland, but Kevin Holland's a middleweight. I mean, shouldn't be a middleweight, right? He should be a welterweight.
Yeah.
Thank you. So for me, I get Jamie Pickett at plus 200.
Plus 220, you know, on draft.
Plus 220. That's, come on, man.
Come on. So, Nate, you got any thoughts on this one?
Oh, man, I was actually going the other way, but, man, you've made a hard argument. I think Dawkins is probably the cleaner fighter. You know, more straight punches. He's got a ton of Darce chokes on his record. Mm-hmm. Good ground game. But, man, you convinced me. I think Jamie Pickett's definitely going to be the stronger guy. A lot more athletic, can definitely catch him and put him away. Yeah, man, I think you've actually swayed me to go Jamie Pickett, especially with the plus 220, like you're saying, on DraftKings.
Shit, man, that means Dawkins is a lock, doesn't it?
Oh, 100%. Don't go with me. I'm messing everything up right now.
So here's my thought is, like, I look over on BetMMA Tips and, like, see people that are putting out these free picks for us to follow. And, you know, you can follow Chronic Combat on BetMMA and you'll see our overall record. And listen, I mean, I didn't see one single bet on Jamie Pickett so far, not one single bet. And usually that's like one of those weird omens. Like, it was like when Cyril Gane was fighting Ngannou, and you look and you see how many people ended up on Gane. It wasn't like zero on Ngannou, but you just get these ideas. Like, sometimes, you know, where the line is priced somewhere and then you see the total amount of people on the other side and you're like, well, that doesn't necessarily match up overall. So yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say this is, like, once again, like a huge play of the day, anything like that. But, man, we're sitting here and we've been cashing on Jamie Pickett. And, like, I don't see why he can't make this at least a close fight, if not take 2 out of 3 or 3 out of 3 rounds, depending on what that physicality really brings. And plus, I want to see his weight cut also. He just fought recently, huge frame, and he's coming back quick. And, yeah, he might be ready. But we saw William Knight and we saw what happened. So, you know, it's bigger guys on a short notice. I do want to see him make weight comfortably, which he's done recently. So I'm expecting him to.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because we say that Jamie Pickett's somewhat of a low output fighter, yet we look at his strikes per minute and he lands significantly more strikes per minute than somebody like Kyle Dawkins. So what does that say about Kyle Dawkins's output?
However, what I will say is, when you look at the distance landed per minute at distance, Dawkins does have seven strikes per minute.
So when
they're at distance, but I think that's where you see Dawkins gas out and go for the clinches, because
he's going for 7 a minute.
How can you land 7 a minute at 42% and not gas yourself out? And you see these guys like, oh, why didn't they go for the finish? Why'd they go to the clinch? Well, because they were tired and they're just trying to regroup before they gas themselves out going for a finish.
Yeah. And I think we're touching exactly on that. I think that Kyle will be doing much better from kickboxing range, but when he goes to take breaks in the clinch, unless Jamie's really super tired from not having a proper camp, I think it could be problematic for Kyle. So certainly worth a grandma's couch cushion dumpster dive for some extra spare change. And for us personally here on Chronic Combat, we're free rolling on Jamie Pickett. So I don't mind playing a little bit of those winnings that I've had on Jamie Pickett back into him here.
Definitely. So that brings us right along to our sloppy big boy main card throwdown. I mean,
unbelievable.
Let me tell you, it's interesting because I feel like sometimes there's so many more like high level fights that you could bring onto the main card, but they always got to throw a heavyweight fight on there, it seems.
They did.
But let me tell you, I mean, I do love me some Parker Porter and Alain Badeau. I mean, I'll put it this way, is he's gonna go out there and throw bombs for better or worse, and technique will just get thrown out the window. So the way I see it here is Parker Porter, he's attempted 12 takedowns in the UFC, giving up 4 inches of reach and 3 inches of height to Badeau. And I will say Badeau does throw some hammers. And, you know, we saw Chris Daukaus take out Parker Porter, but a lot of that was with combinations and continued attack. And at the very end of the first round, I do think Porter's shown to have a chin and be able to weather the damage. He's landed over 100 significant strikes twice as a heavyweight. You see him landing 8.47 per minute. I mean, for a heavyweight, for a guy that's been the distance twice, we know he has the cardio. And he's fighting out of Extreme Couture, somewhere where they do focus on those takedowns. They focus on that grappling. And guess who doesn't love to grapple? It's Alain Badeau. And, you know, you see him be able to stuff initial takedowns at points. Yeah. He's able to use his athleticism to frame, but he doesn't use the best technique with his underhooks and trying to really, you know, get that wrist control back. You see him just kind of try to use his physicality. And then in the Nascimento fight, you see him just slowly starting to gas out, even though he's the one putting the damage on Nascimento, getting him hurt. You know, first round was very clearly Badeau's, and he comes out in the second. I mean, that dude is breathing heavy his mouth. And then next thing you know, Nascimento, the grappler, the guy that we all thought was going to submit Alain Badeau, is the one putting him out on his feet with the strikes and with the jab. So can you trust Badeau here?
No, the problem is with Badeau, unfortunately for him, I mean, I think he maybe isn't he a fight ready or something right now? Something crazy. Where is he right now?
He's been at MMA Factory.
He's somewhere. He went somewhere good, I thought. But the problem
I'll pull that up while you go.
Yeah, the problem with Badeau that I've seen is just his general fight IQ, right? What you're doing to how you're spending your energy, right? If you're throwing, you know, three spinning back fists and high kicks and all this craziness and you're landing it, you know, if you're landing it at a, actually it's crazy. He actually lands it like a 60% clip. That's actually fairly impressive, but it's because he's throwing it with complete abandonment for his own chin. I mean, his defense is under 40%. That's horrible. You know, not really something you look for. Parker Porter, right? Not necessarily, right? Known for his striking, has now come into his own for his grappling, which is awesome to see. Everybody's kind of dark horse in the heavyweight division, although now I guess that's tied to Ivasa. You know, I'd like to see Parker Porter get it done here. The problem is like, you know, -280. It's kind of the theme of the night. You know, can we trust somebody like Parker Porter at such a high favorite? You know, we talk about this all the time with fighters that have shown themselves horrible, horrible, horrible in their first couple UFC fights, and they can really look to turn it around. Unfortunately, last week for Fabio Chiron, you know, one of our examples of that, he was still unable to get on the right side of things. But I kind of see someone like Alain Badeau as somebody that maybe is not as horrible as he's looked in his last two fights and could, you know, be the landmine, right? Could blow up a lot of parlays here. Parker Porter could. So while I will probably be taking Parker Porter, I don't know. It's not something I'm really heavily looking to parlay out. I think we went way too long without hearing our guest.
Yeah.
No, I haven't actually watched Badeau fight. I'm really familiar with MMA Factory. I fought one of their guys, Taylor Laplis. I know Cyril Gaon is from there. Francis was from there. I know they like to throw, and you touched on it, the spinning back fists and a lot of flashier strikes. I don't think that's necessarily going to work against Parker Porter with his cardio and his grappling. I would definitely side with the favorite on this one for probably a decision win. I think he's probably just going to grind him out, go where it's safe, and get the job done.
Those are
interestingly enough. I do think that we do have an outside chance at a little greasy submission play here. You see Parker Porter has four submissions on his record. He's a BJJ brown belt, and it's +600 for a guy that loves going for like key lock attempts. I know
+700 on FanDuel.
He only has two knockout losses in his career, but one of his wins by DQ was him getting choked out in the third round, but getting overturned to a DQ win for his opponent smoking the weed.
Yeah.
Please explain how that one works, TKO.
Listen, that is a clear and obvious performance enhancer. I mean, he should really be in jail for that.
Yeah, so I mean, a +600 on a guy
+700.
plus 700 on a guy that's minus 265. I think that's my greasy submission property.
Yeah, I don't see why not. I like that a lot too. And I honestly, with our boy Nate here at Decision, plus 280 is really not horrible. The problem is you really I'm struggling to trust Badeau, who's been finished in his first two fights here.
I feel that.
Right. Has he even made it out of the second round? I mean, out of the first round?
Not in the UFC.
Oh, no, he did. He made it right. We did. He made it to the beginning of that second round versus Nascimento. But, you know, he probably shouldn't have come out of the corner.
So, yeah, I mean, that brings us on to our next fight here. We have.
Yeah, listen, not everyone could be Nate Maness coming out of the corner out of that first round. All right. Not everybody has that. Not has that gumption.
No, it's a bad play. Don't do it.
Here we go. We got one of the longest standing UFC veterans, Jim Miller, versus UFC newcomer Nicholas.
Two Jersey boys, two fellow Jersey boys here. Jim Miller from Sparta, and I guess Moto maybe not from New Jersey, but heavily training out here in Toms River.
Yeah, he had been out of Factory X. He comes down to train with Ricardo Almeida. It seems like he's got a really well-rounded, camp at least. But when you watch him fight, he really shows out on the feet. He goes to that Muay Thai. I mean, Mota, if there's one thing he's going to be looking to do, it's to bang. And you've seen him hurt people before on the regional scene. You've seen him connect with these combinations. And, you know, he's not chasing guys to the ground. He wants to stand and bang. And when you have seen him test it in the grappling, he's given up his back. He's given up a little control. And yeah, he survived those moments. But I mean, I get Roosevelt Roberts flashbacks to Jim Miller snatching the back and next thing you know, falling over. And it's an arm bar before you know it. I mean, Nicholas Mota, you got to be very careful here, because if you can't catch Jim Miller from distance, things are going to get real interesting in the clinch. I don't know that I necessarily trust that, you know, when this fight was first booked, we saw basically a pick'em line, and now Jim Miller is a plus 155 to Moto's minus 180. Guru, what did you say the other day?
I feel like somebody knows something about the line. Like, why would it open one thing and then a month later be completely flipped the other way?
So after a Jim Miller brutal, devastating round two knockout.
Right. All right. After his awesome overhand left. Over Eric Gonzalez, you know, but what you did see and what does worry me about Jim, our buddy Jim, is that unfortunately, I feel like a lot of these fights are starting to add up for him. He got rocked versus Eric Gonzalez, man. And, you know, all these UFC fights, all taking all this damage, it does add up. And if one thing Nicholas Mota has, and he's got a lot of things, mind you, but if it's one thing that he has, it's power in his freaking hands, man. I know that kind of goes overstated in UFC and MMA fighting in general, but man, it's when you watched him fight Cesar Balmaceda on CFFC. Oh my goodness. Like he was celebrating his knockout for a little bit. And then like the genuine look of concern, you know, when they're getting the neck brace and the stretcher, like, you know, the dude has some serious freaking power. And Jim Miller gets hurt a little bit too much. I don't necessarily, you know, you look at his last couple losses, Joe Selecki and Vink Pichel. Those are guys that ended up grinding him out. Like, right. Like Jim Miller won the first round in those two fights, I believe. And then those guys, you know, ended up grinding him out using his own kind of wrestling top control game against him. I don't necessarily see that from Nicholas Mota. Right. He likes his Muay Thai. He likes to stand and bang. But what I have seen from him is just like he kind of has that it about him. It seems like, right. He has this real level of cerebral patience and, just very, very thoughtful and, methodical with his strikes. And we'll throw in combination, doesn't seem timid. So while I would love Jim Miller to get another win, another finish, keep etching those milestones up in stone, whatever, I'm really struggling to pick him here. And especially after the line got flipped to me, like I said, I feel like somebody knows something. And that skews me out the most. Nate, you see something different than us, bud?
Yeah, I think I am actually going to go with Jim Miller, which is great news for you guys. you know, just so much experience, man. I have a hard time thinking that he's not going to find a way. Mota has even been knocked out two out of his three losses. You know, Jim Miller's submission game. I think if it goes to decision, I would even lean heavy towards Miller, outworking him. If Mota wins, you know, he'll catch him and put him away. But yeah, I think I'm going to lean towards Miller, especially being an underdog. I'm not sure what the decision numbers are or the submission numbers are. But I would lean that way, which is maybe why I lose a lot of bets, but who knows?
Yeah. Hey, listen, I do think that there's a great argument to be made for Miller. And in fact, I'm staying off of the money line entirely here. Yeah. Because will the fight go the distance? No, at minus 186. I do end up thinking that, at least for the most part, it's saying it about 60% of the time we're going to see a finish in this fight. I mean, Mota, every single loss in his career has been by finish.
No,
and
that's
Jim Miller, you know, he's been finished five times himself. And
that's a necessary play. I don't see this fight necessarily going the distance either, unless they both kind of slow down and have a general respect for each other. One thing that I do want to make note of as well, Mota said, I guess it was today in his interviews, that after all these fight cancellations and all these fight camps, the dude is quote broke as fuck. So I just feel like somebody that hungry and that good could be a problem for somebody like Jim Miller. And I'm not saying that he's collecting a paycheck, but obligating his contract. So, I mean, listen, the dude loves it and he's a Hall of Famer. So, you know, definitely and definitely interesting. So, again, like we said, to top the card as we move on, this is really one of those spots to really get some scouting details on Nicholas Mota.
I can't disagree with that. And especially seeing how the line is really, to me, just so sketchy. I can't play a money line here. So follow me on the prop or stay away in my book. And hey, Nate, you might be cashing a little underdog ticket over there.
Oh man, I don't know if I'm really gonna go for it. I'm kidding. I don't know if I want to put that on Jim Miller, man. He's such a veteran, he doesn't need me to help him out.
Don't you put that evil on me, Ricky Bobby.
Right.
But hey, I mean, talk about potential for an exciting fight. In our next one, we got Joaquin Buckley versus Abdul Razak Alhassan.
For as long as it lasts.
Finish after finish from these guys. I mean, Alhassan, he's got a -3 decision differential because he's never won by decision. He's only ever lost three times that way. And the one knockout he did have, I mean, Chaos Williams, that's a straight right down the pike off of a blind leg kick.
He's one of my favorites right now.
Yeah. And so, but here in this fight, I think one of the underrated angles here is that Joaquin Buckley, while we've known him as this explosive kind of bobbing, weaving, ducking, puncher, you know, counter striker, the guy has attempted 12 takedowns so far in his UFC career. And, you know, that's only in five fights. He's averaging over two takedown attempts per fight. And now he moves over to Extreme Couture. Ding, 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 ding. I mean, the obvious path to victory against Alhassan is to grind on him, to wear him out. Can Buckley close the distance and make that happen, though? I do think that there's like a couple clear, distinct angles to this fight. Is that with the line at minus 145 Buckley and plus 125 Alhassan, to get Alhassan at, you know, round one or two, what do we say? Is that plus 200?
Yeah.
To me, I think that one, that's a great idea. And if not, I'd be very interested in,
wow,
in almost a Joaquin Buckley by decision, because the type of juice that you're going to get on that type of prop, I mean, we're talking about plus 480.
This is a really tough fight for me. I kind of like your idea. You can get Alhassan at round one or two at plus 280. But again, even with the thought of that, right? Alhassan doesn't have, like, how many knockouts does he have in the second round? None. He has no knockouts. No. So, like, that's so fucking sketchy. Like, that's the definition of sketchy. So, this is how I am really handicapping this fight. And tell me if I'm crazy. I think you bet, as crazy as it is, you bet Abdul Razak Alhassan by KO in the first round. It's a three-level parlay at, like, whatever it is, plus 500, right? Or even just Alhassan by KO or something. And if he doesn't cash that ticket in the first 5 minutes, he probably will have, you know, be winning that round, would be my thought. So you can probably get on Buckley live as an underdog to start round two or something, and then watch Buckley finally successfully use his wrestling game plan and then win the rest of the fight. Obviously, that's like only if it happens that way. Maybe Alhassan never gets going at all and just gets wrestled the whole time. But That's trusting Buckley's cardio and asking him to put on his Stipe Miocic shoes. I've never been in a fight, but I think when the cages get locked, yeah, you have a game plan and a set idea, but like, I feel like you kind of just rely on what you're used to on some level. Nate, what do you think, man?
Yeah, man, I love what you said. You know, Alisson hasn't finished anybody outside of round one. All of his wins are literally round one finishes. I think Buckley's going to mix it up, like you said. He's going to mix in the takedowns, especially that first round. If he happens to lose that first round, I'd definitely put money on him live going into that second and third. I don't think Alisson's going to decision him. I think Buckley is the better fighter, and I think that shows with him being the favorite. I think he has a lot more options of winning the fight. Regardless of how that first round goes, I think he's going to survive it, and then it's going to be all Buckley from there on out. So I definitely like your live betting there.
Yeah, I don't know why I said Stipe shoes. That's like I guess he likes to wrestle, but that's like weird. That was a weird analogy. He's not like Kamaru. There's so many good wrestlers I could have used, but anyway.
Yeah, I mean, that seems like we have our picks all set on that one, and you know, we're going to move on to another fight here that certainly has banger potential written all over it. I mean, you saw the debut of David Onama. And Gabriel Benitez, if you allow him to stay standing, you know those body kicks are coming and those counter hooks. Oh, man, he could really get it working. So is Onama going to play this thing from distance? I mean, he's got the 3-inch height, 3-inch reach advantage, but he's coming out of Glory MMA.
Seriously, who gets more of a kick? Like, who gets more of a rise in stock off of a loss? Like a relatively brutal loss than like somebody like David Onama? I mean, that's incredible. Right. I mean, it's almost like it was like the loss effect, right? Like Mason Jones got a rise in stock after losing to Mike Davis, and then David Onama gets a rise in stock after losing to Mason Jones. I mean, but I think it might be all warranted. These guys are fucking animals, man. David Onama was just, I mean, if he could have stuffed the takedowns of Mason Jones, I think he would have put him out, man. Like Mason was getting cracked. That guy is as tough as they come, like, you know, Nate will tell you, man, it really is tough as they come.
Yeah.
So, you know, David, you know, I really like his ability to use his offensive pressure here. I mean, he's so strong and aggressive. I think it's going to be a problem for somebody like Benitez, man, who's not going to use the wrestling like Mason Jones did.
I will say, if this fight stays at distance, looking at Benitez's 69% distance defense, I mean, his accuracy isn't great, but I mean, he's still landing 7% more accurate from distance. And you know, he's going to be throwing, as Daz says, the leg kicks over here. So, Nate, I mean, do you have a read on this fight here?
I don't have too much of a breakdown, but I do like Onama coming forward. I think the power is going to be a big issue. I think he's going to push the pace and get in his face. He's also the bigger guy, longer reach. He is the favorite. I'm going to take Onama in this one.
Yeah. I did see the line opened up a little bit closer. Right now we're sitting Onama -155, Benitez +135. I do think Onama is still a pretty solid play on the money line. And I would even think about playing him inside the distance potentially, yeah, because I know Benitez, I mean, he's lost 3 knockouts, 2 submissions, 5 Batista. Decisions.
Oh, is it Batista?
No, Benitez.
Benitez.
Yeah. So, I think I still don't see a line on FanDuel for the inside the distance on this fight, but that's something I would definitely be interested in as I pull up the the methods here on DraftKings. I mean, let's see, David Onama by knockout is +150, submission +600. Onama does have 3 submissions in his career, so that's why I'm like a little more interested in taking a look at the double chance, and that's right, +110.
Right. And that's what kind of brings me back to what I was thinking about, is that, you know, we saw that Benitez doesn't necessarily have the greatest ground game, right? I love Billy Q. Met Billy Q in December. It was awesome. But Billy Q, you know, got the ground and pound KO from his back, like on his back on the ground like this. I mean, it was one of the craziest things I've ever seen, you know. And Justin Jaynes and Humberto Bandanai, while they're, you know, decent fighters, I feel like David Onama is just a different level of physical specimen and athlete. And I don't think, you know, Mowgli's leg kicks are just going to be enough to deter this beast. I mean, literally Mason Jones gave him the whooping and then some, and he just kept coming. So yeah, I think you might get wasted, Daz. I think you might be right, bud.
So I think that brings us straight on along to our next fight here. We're getting into, I think we're down on the prelims at this point. We got Jessica Rose Clark versus Stephanie Egger. This fight, I look towards the Tracy Cortez versus Stephanie Egger fight to kind of get an idea of how this plays out in the wrestling clinch exchanges. And yeah, I think Jessica Rose Clark showed that, you know, when she's not comfortable at distance, she has no problem, you know, cutting through the reach advantage to get on the inside and shoot for a takedown. Coming off the ACL surgeries, and you know, I thought Clark showed, you know, great cardio, the ability to fight with IQ, you know, and when she was getting landed on from distance, I think fighting up at 135 now can only help her chin. She's only ever lost by decision. You know, Egger, she gets that knockout win over Shauna Young, but I will say it seemed like a pretty quick stoppage. There was one big elbow landed and Young kind of covered up and kicked at the hips, and you know, Mark Davis was, you know, saying fight back. But yeah, man, I thought she at least was intelligently defending still at that point, and it didn't seem like she had run out at all. So
I think she was just done. I think she was gassed. She was just I didn't see her really having a chance to improve her position much.
That's
or
true. So
come
maybe
back
there
to
should
win
be
a fight.
More of those types of stoppages.
Sure,
it could definitely be an argument, but. So coming back to this one, though, I mean, Jessica Rose Clark only has one knockout finish in the UFC. All of her other fights have went to decision. Stephanie Egger, while she does have that TKO victory, you know, I mean, she has been to decision three times in her career as well. So fight goes the distance, minus 170, as Daz brings up here.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, that's
like a little I feel like that's almost like a red flag. Like, why is it so? I mean, are they saying that Egger's a finisher, or that Clark's a finisher?
I think that we're going to see a lot of stalling in the clinch. I think Egger is very strong in her judo background. So where Clark has been able, like when she faced Jocelyn Edwards, she's able to just kind of use like outside inside trips with the body lock position. I don't think those are going to exist against Egger, but I do think that when Clark, you know, really changes levels and shoots for the single or double, which she also showed against Edwards, that's where she's going to have more success against Egger, and that's where Tracy Cortez had more success.
And
when
anytime
she tried winning the clinch, she's getting turned out by Egger. But that's where I do think Clark at least has a diversified wrestling background to go to.
Yeah, I mean, when you watch this, the start of the Egger and Young fight, Egger, who's the like we just said, the judoka background, was clearly so much more comfortable standing on the feet and in the striking range. And I mean, whether that was Young just surprised by what she saw, or I don't know what it really was, but she wasn't comfortable. Jessica Rose Clark is not going to have that issue. Oh, but Egger has a reach advantage. Well, guess what? Jocelyn Edwards had much more reach advantage in their last fight. And Jocelyn Edwards is actually a trained striker as opposed to trained wrestler. Like it's the deficit won't really be there. I think this is a fight for Jessica Rose Clark to fumble and lose if she so chooses, but she should get it done, I think. Because I also we're going to flip it to me. I also think that when you see these guys or gals with these wrestling backgrounds, these judoka backgrounds, they train the offense so much that they don't always train the defensive wrestling. So I'm also really excited to see that from Egger. Please, Nate, shut me up.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think this is Jessica Rose Clark's fight to lose. I think she's going to win the stand-up. I think she's going to be really great at shooting her low takedowns and getting in on the legs and then finishing those. I don't think we're going to see a finish in this one, but I think she's going to be very active. I think she's going to win the rounds pretty securely. And, I mean, I'm seeing just a slight favorite, minus 190, nothing to throw her in on like a nice little parlay or something, not too big odds to really not give you, you know, worth the risk. But I think this is a done deal for her, as much as it can be in MMA. I think this one's hers to lose.
I totally feel that, whether that's a bad omen or not. I'm sitting here saying, Jessica Rose Clark, if I had a best bet of the day, I have a two-leg parlay, and this is going to be the first leg. I'm not saying it's a five-unit parlay. I don't know if there's one of those this week.
Right.
But you're probably going to see 2 to 3 units with, you know, Jessica Rose Clark, that's going to be the first name on there for me. Stay tuned, and you guys are going to see who the second leg is.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to even say it like that, but I feel like Jessica Rose Clark is fairly marketable and stuff like that. Like, I think that she's got a good face and she's well-spoken on the mic. And, I think that they're maybe trying to give her a good win here on the main card. Wait, is she even on the main card? Did I just make that up?
Yeah, I think you did.
Yeah, that sounds like me. Yeah, we're like deep into the fights, man. She's like the fourth fight of the night. Yeah, she's on the main card, bro. She's headlining. You didn't know?
But that, like we said, that's going to be the first leg there. So stay tuned, guys, because we're keeping this train rolling right along. We got a really interesting. You want to talk about getting your wrestling shoes? Could this be one of those fabled like wrestler versus wrestler matchups that just ends up playing out on the feed here? We got Chess Skelly versus Mark Striegel. We got Team Takedown versus MMA Lab. You know, Mark, and both of these guys have very similar records. They're both 18-3. And where Chess Skelly's got 10 submission wins, Striegel's got 14. I mean, to make your debut against Nurmagomedov on short notice, I mean, that's even Saeed Nurmagomedov. I mean, that is a tough task for anybody, especially Mark Striegel, and he was fighting, I believe he was fighting at 135 in that fight, whereas in this one, he's going to be at 145.
Yes.
So that's certainly notable. I mean, he has given up 3 inches of height.
He's a career featherweight, by the way. So that he took that fight, I guess, just to get his hat in the ring there.
Yeah. So just very weird circumstances as far as how he gets into the UFC, but I just can't help but looking at Chess Skelly. I mean, he was in the octagon waiting for Jamal Emmers to make the walk out. And I mean, what a terrible situation to have that pulled away, coming back from all these injuries. And I can only imagine how hard you work throughout your whole training camp just for something like that to happen when you're already standing in the cage. I mean, as they say, I mean, you don't expect anything until it's happening.
Yeah.
So, I mean, listen, that's why here, I mean, Striegel, I do think he has a little bit more to fight for, where like Chess Skelly, I mean, maybe this is very narrative based, but I do think he's just trying to get back in there to, like, you know, prove it to himself that he made it back from all this. I believe he was talking about some retirement stuff before that Emmers fight.
Mm.
So, I mean, where I do think he has all the experience in the UFC, he does have all the skills. I don't know that his path to victory is so secure. And I mean, he's coming in as a minus 200 favorite. I think I'm really looking at the Striegel side.
I feel like it's the only side you can look at. It's really tough to trust Chess Skelly at this point in his career. Saeed Nurmagomedov, who Striegel made his debut against, is an absolute fucking beast. I mean, one of the scariest guys in the division at this point. You know, the left hook ground impact is disgusting. Oh my God, the poor guy. He's just trying to shoot in for a takedown and he just gets clipped with the left and he doesn't even see it. It's just, oh my God. So the problem with Striegel is that he's a bit of a one trick pony, but guess what? So is Chess Skelly. And, you know, Striegel, on the other hand, like, what you see from him in his regional tape was just, a lot of good ground control, right? And a lot of aggressiveness, especially when shooting for the takedowns. Like, he's going to keep coming forward. I like to call it spam wrestling, right? He's not just going to quit and give up. So like we were saying, like, I don't necessarily think that it's going to be one of those standing where nobody shoots any takedowns. Like, I think he's going to go for it. Because what you've seen from Chess Skelly is kind of like what I was saying before, is like these guys and gals that are so good at the offensive wrestling or the offensive grappling, they don't train those defensive positions as much. And you watch him with Jordan Griffin go back and forth, give up submission attempts, give up your back, give up this, give up your neck. It was really sloppy. It was almost like a spar grappling. Like, it was a weird fight. And I just don't think that – I do think that in a fight with Mark Striegel, who is a whiz for going for that for the rear naked choke, the guillotine choke, I think he might catch him, you know? I really do. Like you said, I think he might be a little bit hungrier. So, Nate, do you know anything about these guys that maybe we don't know?
And this one is one of the harder ones for me to choose, man. like you said, they're both wrestlers. They both are good at the same kind of things. Chaz Kelly hasn't fought in 2 years. He's a little bit older, like you say, maybe even looking towards, his career after fighting. And Mark is an up and comer. He took the short notice at a lower weight class. I mean, getting to a lower weight class. I don't think you understand just the amount that it takes to get to a lower weight class just to get your call up. You know what I mean? I think you're going to see both guys get takedowns. I think it's going to be back and forth. I'm definitely leaning towards Mark Strigel, though. I think he's going to win the majority of them. I think it's actually going to go to decision. And I think he's just his heart, him being in the UFC, trying to make a name for himself. I think he's just going to outwork him and win more of the positions than Chaz Kelly does. I'm going to take him by decision.
Love it. Love it. And I really love the cerebral, the fight lore that you get into there, the mentality of the fighter. Because we talk about 10 pounds like it's, oh yeah, we know it's difficult, but like explicitly the sweat, the tears, all the shit that really goes into that. You're right, the amount of hunger, the amount of drive that you have to not only drop those 10 pounds, but to then fight a fucking killer in Saeed, and obviously take a whooping to the point where you've now been sidelined for over a year again
And
now.
he's not a small guy either. He's kind of stacked.
He
It'd be
is.
hard for me to get to 125, man. I
Yeah.
don't know. Props to him for sure.
Wow. No, for sure. So I think it's a dog or pass kind of spot. You can't trust Chaz here, especially at the chalk. I think he truly is the landmine of the day. I mean, that to me, that almost puts Mark Striegel as a, is he our dog of the day? Is he our dirty dog of the day?
Damn, you're pushing a hard bargain here. I'm not sure I can really argue. It's just, I will say I did a lot. It's not that I didn't do any tape study for this fight. It's just I hate making we still got more
Big
time in the
leaps
week
on
to
just
do
tape,
this
yeah.
stuff. So, like, I'd like to, see a little bit more of the regional stuff from Striegel before I like, jump on that train. But like, listen, the general idea, the narrative, and the whole play there. I know we always like to fade the narrative, but I think like the narrative is clearly on the minus 200 fighter here. So, I I, damn man, you might be talking me into the dog of the day here, aren't you? I
Don't let me
mean,
do it. Don't let me do
that's it. That's it. Hold
it.
on. But we did it. It's the dog of the day.
Listen,
So,
that's
no, I
awesome.
mean, listen. So, let's get on to our next one here. We got, I mean, this is probably the prettiest fight of the day.
Oh, wait, did I say it? Wait, did I say the one prop? I don't even know if I said it. I got so distracted.
Oh.
The fight to go the distance is plus 110.
What?
So we don't even have to pick a side.
Oh, wow. That's also tasty. Wow. Okay.
Excellent.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, wow. Okay. All right, Guru, you're talking to me. I like
I
that.
am.
All right,
I'm,
not
we are also, you know who else we're talking to? We're talking to Nate Maness, man. Nate
not no,
Maness,
Nate
man.
Maness. Come on,
Nate
man.
Maness. I know Nate Maness. We got Nate Maness in the house at Mayhem, Mayhem, blah, 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 at Mayhem Maness One on Twitter. Is that your Instagram handle as well, pal? At
Yeah,
Mayhem
I
Maness.
did.
At
Yes,
Mayhem
nice.
Maness One, Twitter, Instagram. Go give him a follow, guys, for real. He's
Appreciate it.
a big up and comer, man. He's gonna be making splashes, right? Hopefully soon. No breaking news to give us, right?
The UFC actually wanted me in April. I hadn't sparred until tonight. I'm looking at May at the latest, so
May
definitely
at the
before the
latest.
summer.
So
Awesome.
take your
Can't
time, man.
wait.
Get that advantageous matchup, man. I'm telling
Right,
you.
right. That's
Hell
it.
yeah.
For
Well,
real,
no,
bro.
can't wait to see you back out there. But
Thank
right
you.
now we got quite a matchup here, whether you're comparing Instagrams or you're comparing their fight history. I mean, we got Diana Bobitsa versus Gloria DePaola. And
Oh, their
I mean,
Instagrams.
yeah, I mean,
Sheesh.
but before we get Nate in trouble here with his coworkers,
Sheesh.
we got a I know that this might not be the most technical fight that we all wanted to run and break down, but I will say, I mean, Gloria DePaola put on, quite a performance on Dana White's Contender Series. Now, as she's gotten into her first two matchups, I thought she had a couple really tough matchups in Jin Yu Frey and Cheyenne Nauvlismus.
Yeah.
That knockout that knockout was interesting because she's getting back to stand up and Vlismas just times that head kick so perfectly.
Brutal.
And yeah, I mean, it was probably Vlismas on her way to, like control and wrestling as we saw, early takedown, all that. But Yeah, man, I see now, you know, we got Diana Bobitsa, and is she that type of like grindy wrestler, veteran? I don't really see all that same stuff. I mean, I see someone that has six knockouts and four submissions in the 115 division. That's a pretty decent amount of finishes as far as that goes. I just don't think the Paula is so easily finished. That head kick knockout is like a one in a million type of thing right there. That's her only knockout loss in her career, where she's lost three other fights by decision.
Yes.
I see DePaula being able to get off from distance in this fight. I see her being able to use her offensive striking for the first time and really showing us what she can do from distance. Now, Belbica, she's gonna have a slight reach advantage and all that, but like, can you really trust her to fight the highest IQ in this spot? I thought she did look, you know, a lot better against Goldie, landing a knockdown, nearly getting a finish at the end. But I mean, we're talking about, I believe, two different types of levels of fighters, and to see DePaula as a +100 on FanDuel still, I'm tempted.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting. One of the things that we really like to talk about on this show is, which we didn't get to because there's not as many highly publicized fighters, is sometimes the narrative going in. So I really wondered the narrative of this fight. What would the line be if Gloria DePaula didn't get knocked out in 1 minute? Right? Like, even if she lost a unanimous decision or something, like what would the line be? I'm not sure that it would still be pick'em. I actually am really excited for this fight. Not only just optically, but I actually think that this fight's going to be I think it's going to be a barn burner. I think these girls both throw hands. So, and I think that they're going to come swinging. Part of me almost wants to bet the fight not to go the distance, but I think that's just, it could be really crazy, even if it's +150 for it not to go the distance. I do kind of want to take a shot on Gloria DePaula here. Because, like I said, just based on whatever this narrative is going to be, I feel like in a pick 'em fight, people are going to remember what happened most recently, and they're going to be on Diana Belbica. But when you look at the end of that Hannah Goldie fight, she was getting smashed. Another 20 seconds, I think. She was in full mount. She cut every time she was taking down, Goldie cut straight to full mount with no problem. Gloria DePaula, I think you sent it to me on Twitter, TB. She was talking about a big camp change and a big mentality change and wanting to implement some new things. The girl's only 26 and Belbita's only 25. So these girls are prospects, lots to grow and change. Not really one that I want to risk my money on. Maybe I'll borrow some of Nate's and do that. But
I'm
not
losing all
something
mine
I'll.
myself.
Yeah, Nate, like Nate said, he does a pretty good job losing his own money himself, so maybe I don't need to lose his for him. So I, yeah, you know, it's interesting. Like, it's still even on DraftKings -110 even each, and but like you said on FanDuel, that line slid a little bit. It's now -122 Belbica, +100 to Paula. What do you think, Nate? It's been too long without hearing from you.
Yeah, man, I think it's a pick 'em. Belbita has the size, the reach, and DePaula is just a little bit too inconsistent. She really hasn't put together anything more than two wins in a row. And she did get called. I actually think this one's going to go to a decision. I know I've said that a lot, man, but I don't know. I am a Diana Belbita fan too. I don't know if it's for her fighting or for her looks. Cut that part out for my wife. So with that being said, I'm going to place a small bet on Paula just to secure the win for my girl.
There you go.
listen, and you know what? To your point though, with the flip-flopping of the wins, that first loss was to Ariane Carnelosi, who's a freaking tank, man.
Right.
So, and she ends up making it to the UFC herself and is a bit of a, I think, on her way to the top 15, no?
Could be.
Like she's
Yes,
climbing her
maybe.
way there. And like TB said at the very beginning of this breakdown, Jinyu Frey and Cheyenne Valismis are not necessarily easy tasks for your first two UFC fights. Very listen, this is DePaula's make or break chance to everybody's point here, I think. If she comes out and has another lackluster performance, they could really be done with her, or maybe just let her fight out her contract.
Yeah, I agree with that.
In all fairness, I think we spent enough time on that one, boys.
Are you sure?
Honestly, on this next one, I'm not sure there's too much time to be spent on it. I mean,
no.
You got Chad Anhaliger versus Jesse Strader. And
he does what now?
And I think this is one of those ones where you got to just this is a full pass for me. You got to sit back and take in the UFC tape on these guys, because I mean, Strader, to watch him fight Montel Jackson in his debut on short notice.
Learn nothing.
But what I did learn is that he drops his hands on every single kick or combination that he throws. The second he goes offensive, those hands are down. So it's like, while Anhaliger is, you know, 11-5, all five losses by submission, I don't think Jesse Strader is the guy. I mean, he's got four knockouts and one decision win, but he's also got like a 6-inch reach advantage here, and he comes forward and he throws crazy. So it's like, if Strader is going to win, it's going to be some type of flash KO early, because, you know, I mean, he's got the reach advantage and he's got that come forward type of mentality. But if the longer this fight extends out, the more he plays into the clinch. And yeah, I think Chad's got this, but at -255, I mean, to just stay away, just don't blow your money on this one. That's my thought.
So speaking of blowing money, so here's the thing. So Jesse Strader, he loves his boxing, like you said, very unorthodox. It's going to be a little bit of a wild man for sure. I just feel like he's not a super well-rounded mixed martial artist, unfortunately, at least at this stage, where you look at Chad Anhaliger. All I can think about is the curse word. Chad Anhaliger. We only practice it six times. Yeah. Anhaliger. So Chad is that good mixed martial artist, that well-rounded mixed martial artist. You look at his Dana White Contender Series fight versus Gafurov. Oh my goodness, the dude comes in as a over +300 dog, right? So nobody gives him a damn chance in this one. And he goes out there and he stuffs most of these takedowns, right? He gets gives up some top control, some clinch control, right? But he's reversing it. He's pushing on this guy at every single place, making it tough, making him grind. And he eventually makes the dude gas out and by far lands the more significant strikes, wins rounds 2 and 3, and, you know, wins a split decision, which should have been unanimous. You know, it was a bad call. And then before that, you know, he beats Brady Hystand, who was my pick to beat Tercios in the tough fight for the belt. So, you know, or for the trophy. So those two fights, man, those are pretty solid. I really like what I saw. Am I rushing to the window to play nearly -300 on a guy making his UFC debut and has a 6-inch reach disadvantage? Hell no. But what I do see is money line decision only. Okay. So that means if there's a finish, we get our money back. And the only way to lose is if Jesse Strader wins a decision. We get Chad there at -200. So
that's better odds than his money line. That legitimately.
Yeah, exactly. So it's better odds than his current money line. So we're shaving off 55 cents there. And I get to take away Jesse's most likely path to victory.
Nate, where do you find yourself on this one?
Yeah, man, I actually think this is kind of like the Jessica Rose Clark fight. I think Chad's a lock. I don't think I'm going to put any money on it just because of how steep it is. And there's really nothing to gain without putting too much into it. Mm-hmm. I actually think it's going to be a finish. I think either with the ground and pound or catching a guillotine choke. He has a few on his record. He has beat Brady Hystand, not just beat him, put him away. Yeah. He's on a non-fight winning streak here. The reach is the only thing that scares me a little bit, you know, closing the distance. But I think he's going to be able to get that done. And I just think he's genuinely the better fighter in this one.
Damn, I totally agree. It's just that line and the, you know, maybe my lack of really digging into the extensive tape that's keeping me away from this. But stay tuned, because you never know what makes it on our Bet MMA sheet by the end of the week.
This is true. This is very, very true. What a weird card, man. I feel like this time last year we were breaking down the Rosenstruck and Gone card, and that card ended up being like, when we did our recap show, it was like one of the, I don't know, simplest. That's a nice way. Simplest cards of the year. So I feel like just time-wise, maybe you know what this too, Nate, right? Like, is there like a time when fighters like cycle, like they don't really like to take fights in February, like they like them in June, they like them in January, they like them in September? Is that seems to be.
I don't know for everybody else, man, but I hate running out in the snow. So I'm really not even mad about my jaw. It's kind of taking me out of the winter time. I can't speak for everybody, but I feel that way personally for sure.
Okay, that's interesting. Peeling
Thanks
back
for
the
sharing,
curtain a
bud.
little bit. I like hearing that.
And something about like these kind of smaller cards too. Sometimes you get a lot more finishes on cards like these, so it's nothing to sleep on for sure.
Oh no, I mean that's the thing is that there's kind of two different levels to looking at it. One, you're looking at like the hype of the card and the names behind it, but like then there's the actual like viewing potential and like what excitement you're gonna have sitting down on fight night and catching all these fights. Like that's why we keep coming back every week, is that sometimes the names might not be the biggest on paper. That means they got the most to fight for. So you
Right.
better be tuning in.
No, for sure.
For
Listen,
sure.
all fights are interesting. Like I got my Cage Fury hoodie on. Like I watching fights. Like there's oh, that's the thing though. There's always going to be entertainment value with these fighters that work so hard at their craft, and to put on a show for everybody. It's just weird when we have over the next two cards, right? We have like 24 fights and maybe I think four ranked fighters. So it's like it's we're just we're a little sparse in terms of that, but. Viewing potential and entertainment and appreciation for our men and women that work super hard to put on a show every Saturday is always at its utmost. Always, always, always.
Definitely.
So we're getting down into the nitty-gritty here, guys. We got a couple super late replacements to quote unquote close out our show, but to open up the card here. And for one, we got Jonathan Pierce versus Christian Rodriguez. And the way I see this fight, I mean this is the second leg of my parlay, guys. I mean Jonathan Pierce, I was on Omar Morales in the last fight, and that's after cashing on Pierce by knockout over Kai Kamaka.
Yes,
I was
sir.
like, you know what? Just the striking defense. I can't really trust him to commit fully to the wrestling game plan without getting in a firefight.
We liked Omar
No.
Morales' takedown defense too. We thought his takedown defense would hold up against Pierce. It did not.
Exactly, and it didn't, and that's the thing. And then you look at like the game plan, and Pierce did not wait to get into his wrestling in his last fight. He's had a fight ready. He's really been putting in that work on his cardio, on his overall just game plan, and man, it really just starts shining through. I think that debut against Joe Lauzon, I always say it wrong. I don't know why, but and that shows that I'm not like one of the old time fans. But hey, we're getting into it. As you can see, we got the passion. So I mean that's the interesting part is that he actually in the beginning of his career, after he goes 4-0, Pierce loses three fights in a row, two by submission, one of them being a toe hold, and then the other by decision. Then he goes off, rips off a five fight run, makes his debut against one of the biggest veterans in the UFC. You can kind of, forgive him for getting lost in the moment in Lauzon's hometown and all that. But yeah, I mean, just seeing him bounce back, seeing the game plan he goes after, and all those concerns you have about, the striking defense, whatever, it's like, I just don't think Christian Rodriguez coming in, he was preparing for another fight in a different organization, but he ends up getting the call here to come up. I mean, yeah, he won his contender series fight, but he didn't get signed immediately off it. It wasn't necessarily the most convincing decision win. He gets controlled a lot. And when he's able to separate, he comes forward and lands these combos, but Pierce isn't gonna let him get off. And I just see a minus 335. This is one of those like Rodriguez is taking this, short notice, get into the UFC, and that's kind of the win in itself right there sometimes. And while I mean anyone's got a chance, he's got a lot of power, he's going to come forward and throw. I just see Pierce being able to win this any which way the fight goes, and he's got what is this, a 5-inch height advantage, and I don't even know if I could trust that 71 and a half inch reach out, because sometimes these guys coming in before they get to Vegas and get measured out at the PI, you can't really trust some of the statistics you're getting out. So I'm expecting Pierce to come in with a big size advantage, big experience advantage, and just absolutely be able to do whatever he wants in any aspect of the fight. So you throw Jessica Rose Clark minus 190, Jonathan Pierce minus 335, and you got yourself a little minus 102 parlay. So
Oh.
you're talking like between 2 and 3 units on that. That's probably going to be my biggest play of the night.
Yeah, I do like it. It's really hard to not be on one of the worst nicknames, JSP here. Really, that's a poor one. listen, he's got the, like, it's kind of sus. He's got like the perfect body for MMA. He's long, he's lean, he's strong, right? He's wiry. Like he's got a really interesting frame, especially for the division. You know, what you see from him, like you so well put already, his awesome wrestling, his ability to mix that in. And then what you love to see is the top control, right? You're not just wasting your time and energy going for takedowns. He's using proper technique, and then he's, you know, doing the right thing to stay on top and then shoot for submissions or ground and pound, right? He's not just laying and praying. He's doing damage when he's in those positions. You look at somebody like Christian Rodriguez, and you know, while he looked decent against Junior Cortez on the Dana White Contender Series, you know who didn't look decent? Junior Cortez. He did not look so great. He did not look like his sister, you know, really in any way, shape, or form. Unfortunately. Right. But you know, sorry, Brian. But, you know, so Junior really didn't look so great there. And, you know, it wasn't really the most impressive of a win. I was honestly even surprised he got a contract, and he did. He's 24, so that does make sense. Oh, no, that was the thing. He didn't get the contract. I'm so sorry. That was the thing. I wasn't surprised he didn't get the contract, because he didn't get the contract. But then he gets another fight 3 months later against this guy, Ryan McIntosh. And again, I don't want to talk shit about anybody for any reason.
I actually know Ryan McIntosh.
You do?
Yeah.
Oh my God. So can you tell me a little bit about this guy, bro? Like, he's 19-36 with 30 submission losses.
He's one of those guys. If you call him 2 days before, he's down. He's a scrapper. He's not scared to fight anybody. He's here to make money. And he's kind of just doing what he does. But he's a cool guy. But I mean, you know, your record speaks for itself. He's not going to get signed anywhere anytime soon. But
dude, I didn't get to see the fight. I was looking for tape on it. It's a win within one. It's within 1 minute of round one via verbal, like he verbally quit, or whether it's maybe via punches, maybe it's via, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's an injury.
I'm not sure. I didn't watch it. I seen where he had lost on Facebook and this and that, but I have no idea how he lost or why or anything like that.
But he loses to Christian Rodriguez, and that's what gets him this fight with Jonathan Pierce.
So, right. Nate, where do you see it on this one?
I haven't watched Rodriguez fight. I won't talk too much about him. I know Jonathan Pierce pretty well. He's another Tennessee kid. I'm from Tennessee.
Right.
We kind of grew up on the same, you know, regional scene. So I've at least been watching him. You know, he's at 145. I've made 145 quite a few times and fought up there. I love him with the height advantage. I think he can take this fight anywhere he wants it. He's got the bigger wins. I would pick him to win by finish, either ground and pound or submission. I think he's going to get the job done. And he's not one of those guys, you know, he's a scrapper. He's not one of those guys, if he ends up being in a harder fight than he anticipates, he's not going to fold.
I think
he's going to push through, and he's definitely going to win this one, I think.
All right. So if you're going to say by finish, we got the double chance here by knockout or submission is plus 100 for Pierce. That's crazy value, honestly. I mean, this seems like, you know, throw out to you know, Uncle Wheezy. It's the potential for the ass shaving of the week, just given the circumstances.
It's one of my favorites, right? This is the card opener.
Nope.
No.
We got.
Oh shit! We still got the Batista fight.
So that's it. So.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, but yeah,
Nate, thanks so much for hanging out with us, man. Seriously.
No, it's all good.
So let's As we just made a reference to, now that you know what our play of the day is, let's close out the show here, because I think that there might be something fishy at the opener of this card. And Guru, why don't you take us away on this one?
Oh, yeah. All right. So we got Mario Bautista taking on Jay Perrin. Jay Perrin, a guy that, in my opinion, should already be in the UFC, man. The dude got robbed. He fought on the Dana White Contender Series. He fought Dwight Joseph, all right? And no question about it, he lost the first round. He won the next two. I mean, I wish you could pull up the, you know, UFC. Oh, wait, do you actually have the individual match breakdown? No, you don't, right? No, because we don't have those stats on our database. But the individual stat breakdown for that fight, I mean, it was so clearly obvious that Jay Perrin won the fight. Like, I'll say it again, he was robbed. So unfortunately, I didn't get to the Diego Silva tape, which I heard a couple people saying that maybe he was where he won. Maybe he did the robbing. So I'd really like to go back and see that maybe after this pay-per-view. I mean, after this pay-per-view, after the podcast. But I did get to watch his Josh Smith fight where he looked great, you know? Mm-hmm. So Jay Perrin is somebody extremely well-rounded, right? Has shown himself to be also like a very good grappler, right? Will go there, will take the fight there. And Mario Bautista has shown himself to, you know, somewhat be susceptible to those takedowns, not necessarily have the greatest ground game. Am I wrong about that, TB?
I realistically think that Bautista cuts too much weight. I feel like he's one of those guys. If we see another knockout like he had against Trevin Jones, you know, he didn't really see that uppercut coming. He ducks into it. But, you know, just seeing like there's certain guys like on the scale that just you get a little worried when you see like how far out their like cheekbones are and stuff. And he's 5 foot nine cutting down into this weight class. And that's just shout out to Dan Tom, because over time, you know, that could be really tough.
They're both 5'9", I believe.
Yeah, but I just think he's someone that shows it more.
Right.
On the scale. Like, there are people that, you know, maybe the nutrition side of it ends up being a lot healthier and stuff like that. But, you know, it just, I will say the way that you've seen him get knocked out like that, or even Sanhagen, you know, in his debut, a round one submission, right. He's not beyond getting finished at this point. And I do think Bautista has good technical skills. He feints well. He tries to lead you into stuff, but you see him getting controlled by Trevin Jones in the clinch along the fence. You know, I do think that method, that path is there for Jay Perrin. And while Bautista at a minus 290, man, I have a tough time really trusting him after a finished loss like I saw last time out when he was at an even lesser number. So, I mean, listen, Nate, what do you see on this one?
Right before I got signed, I had a kind of a choice between opponents, and Jay Perrin actually was one of those choices. Wow. So I've watched quite a bit on him. I love him as a fighter. I love Bautista as a fighter. I think this is my early pick for fight of the night. I think this is going to be a real scrap. I think they're going to go after it. Bautista has some big wins, man. He with flying knee, Miles Johns.
Yeah.
He ended up getting caught from Corey Sanhagen, but what does that really mean at this point, man? The dude's a monster. Jay's been looking good. You know, he's got a great ground game. His hands are really good, too.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to pick Perrin with the upset, but I think it's going to be a barn burner, man. I think they're going to get after it.
So to your point, Nate, and that's the thing, is the fight is close, right? We can admit that the fight is close. You can get Jay Perrin at plus 225. Mario Bautista is nearly minus 300. It's disrespect at this point. Yeah. Perrin, like you said, I mean, he's what I really loved about watching tape on Perrin was how comfortable he was in all aspects of his game. I love the way he shrimps and gets up when he's on the ground. What's his face in that Dana White Contender Series fight? A couple times he had gotten reversed in position, maybe going for a submission or just kind of gave up the wrong spot. And that guy, Dwight Joseph, could not hold him down for a second, man. He was doing everything he could to spring up, to get up, to reverse position. Again, one of those guys that you like to see, that you want to put your money on, because that even if you lose, he's damn sure going to fight for your ticket. You know, like a Nate Maness kind of guy, you know, just at random. But I really like Perrin here at a dog price, at least especially such a steep dog price, because like we talked about off air last week, it was just that classic chalky pay-per-view with only two or three underdogs cashing. And I think the dogs come home to roost this time.
Hey, I mean, that brings us to the end. And what an exciting time. I can't say how thankful we are to have one of the top prospects in the UFC here. I mean, Nate Maness coming in on fire, 3-0 overall. I mean, I can't tell you how much we appreciate you spending time with us, man.
Yeah, no problem, man. We can do it again for sure.
We'd love that, man. Seriously. At Nate Mayhem 1 on Twitter and Instagram. Nate, the floor is yours. If you want to plug anything, say anything at all, bud.
Yeah, man. I'll thank some sponsors. Being in Construction, Baker Chiropractic, Team Lynn, Ape Ethics, Max Custom Completions, Mural painting, all custom roofing. I appreciate all you guys letting me do this full time and helping support me and my family. And I appreciate you guys for letting me on.
Seriously, Nate, you're a true legend and so generous with your time, man. Thanks so much for coming on. And you know, I know you had, you know, a little difficulties last week, whatever, just with scheduling. And you know, you didn't even, I was telling TB about it, like, you didn't even have to, like, you could have just not said shit and never showed up. Like you don't owe a shit. So to really, like, to be just a, not only a stand-up guy, but to just reschedule and be here with us and again give us your hard time on, you know, after a tough gym day and your own
first
life
day
with
back
a wife
in sparring,
and stuff.
Man, like,
yeah, man, seriously,
after Valentine's
so much
Day,
there.
We can't say enough how much of an honor.
Yeah,
oh
really
man,
means
no,
a
I
lot.
appreciate you guys coming on, man. I appreciate what you guys do, you know, bringing more eyes to the sport, even the betting side, everything, man. I enjoy all of it, so I appreciate you guys having me on for sure.
Hell yeah!
Seriously,
well.
Nate, it's a dream come true, man. If you really would have told me a year ago that, you know, we'd be sitting here interviewing you, talking to you, breaking down fights at you, like, man, we could be grabbing a beer. Like, this is truly awesome. So thanks so much, man. It's really, really a
Yeah, anytime, guys. I'm definitely down to do it again.
All right. Well, hey, guys, thanks so much for
we
making
will
it
take
this
you up
far.
On that.
And, make sure you follow us on BetMMA. Give us a like and subscribe on this channel. Give Nate a like and a follow. Make sure you check out all his content. And we'll be waiting over here. We're hoping we hear something about May sometime soon, man. But hey. Thank you so much. And guys, we hope you have a great night.
Yeah, and we'll see you next week, right? For not for Dariush Makhachev, because Dariush has now pulled out with an ankle injury. It seems like Bobby King motherfucking Green will be stepping up on short notice. What a savage.
So stay tuned, my friends.
Stay tuned. Nate, thank you so much. Fans, yep. Thank you so much. See you next time.